Well, good evening, everybody. Okay, this is not really an exciting subject. The transatlantic trade and investment partnership. I mean, Carla is on holiday, I think, in Cyprus. She said she wasn't going to come back for this subject. So I'll try and make it as interesting as possible, which is quite difficult, really. So TTIP, it's the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. It's a comprehensive free trade and investment treaty, and it's currently being negotiated in secret between the EU and the USA. And the only reason it's come to light is through things like WikiLeaks and Freedom of Information requests, that details of it have actually come to light. I mean, the main goal of TTIP is to remove regulatory barriers which restrict the potential profits to be made by transnational corporations on both sides of the Atlantic. It's a deal to cut tariffs, and it will make it easier for companies on both sides of the Atlantic to access each other's markets. The industries that potentially will be affected include pharmaceuticals, cars, energy, finance, chemicals, clothing, food and drink. Yes, the health service will be included. I haven't mentioned it in that intro. Yeah. But there will be a little section where we'll talk about the health service later on. Let me just give you the pros for it, or what the capitalist class are calling the pros. I mean, the British government claims TTIP could add £10 billion to the UK economy, $80 billion to the US, and over 100 billion euros to the EU every year. It says, this is the government says, shoppers would benefit by the removal of EU import tariffs on popular goods such as jeans and cars. It's also claimed that reducing regulation would help UK businesses export to the US, with small businesses in particular predicted to benefit. And supporters say restrictive markets will be opened up. For example, currently British lamb and venison cannot be exported to the US. Now, tariffs between the EU and the USA are actually already really low. They're about 3%. And both sides foresee they will be eliminated under this new agreement. Now, the main focus of negotiations is on harmonising regulations, reducing non-tariff barriers to trade, or getting rid of them if they're deemed unnecessary. For instance, the US and EU regulators have different requirements for testing the safety of cars, drugs and soft furnishings, for example. And going through the different tests is expensive for firms, particularly in developing new medicines, for example. TTIP aims to reduce these costs by bringing in common standards. This is what Cameron said recently. He said, the opportunities for Britain are trading more with the USA are clear. 2 million extra jobs, more choice and lower prices in our shops. We're talking about what could be the biggest bilateral trade deal in history, a deal that will have a greater impact than all the other trade deals on the table put together. And Juncker, the EC president, he said, it is anachronistic that in the 21st century, Europeans and Americans still impose customs duties on each other's products. These should be swiftly and fully abolished. I also believe that we can go a significant step further in recognising each other's product standards or working towards transatlantic standards. And we'll talk about harmonising of transatlantic standards later. This is the CBI, John Cridland. This deal is vital for future growth. It would create an integrated market of over 800 million people, bringing more choices for consumers at cheaper prices. And with the UK already trading more and investing more with the US than any other country, there are real advantages to drive home, particularly for smaller firms. TTIP will be the biggest free trade deal ever negotiated. So there's a lot of shouting up there about it. Now, what people may know about it is something called the ISDS mechanism. Sorry about all these acronyms. Investor State Dispute Settlement, ISDS. I keep on thinking it's going to be IDS, I'm going to say. I'm not talking about Ian Duncan Smith. It's the Investor State Dispute Settlement. Now, this will give corporations the right to challenge individual countries' laws. It proposes to allow corporations... This is under TTIP, but as I'll say, it actually already exists already, and I'll talk a bit later about that. Companies will be able to receive compensation for the absence of, quote-unquote, predictable regulatory environment, which means then if, obviously, a government comes into power and decides to increase regulations on some sort of business, that wouldn't be a predictable regulatory environment, and therefore a corporation could sue the government if it led to lowering of their profits. And already under existing World Trade Organization free trade rules, this type of mechanism, the ICS, has been used to attack clean energy, mining, land use, health, labour and other policies. More than $14 billion in the 16 claims are now under litigation, in the US, all relate to environmental, energy, financial regulation, public health, land use and transportation policies, which are not traditional trade issues. So under TTIP, a multinational could sue a government if their profits might be affected, for example, by the imposition of food safety standards or wage rises for workers. Also, ISDS creates a parallel legal system, independent of national law, and it allows transnational corporations to sue governments in special international tribunals, which are basically secret corporate courts, that might prevent and they would obviously deliberate on things that might prevent or reduce profit. I mean, transnational corporations call it indirect appropriation, which I quite like that, indirect appropriation. So this arbitration panel that corporations would actually sit up in front of would be made up of corporate lawyers, which other people would have no representation, and it would not be subject to any judicial review. Now, there's already been a slew of publicised ISDS cases, which, I mean, I wasn't aware of. I mean, I may have been aware of some of these issues, but I didn't know it was called ISDS. But, investors in the EU actually sued the Egyptian government when it raised the minimum wage for workers, because obviously it affected the profits of any business that was actually invested in Egypt. I won't mention all the instances, just the ones that really stand out. I mean, I think it's a US tobacco corporation, Philip Morris, launched an investor state case against the Australian government when it introduced plain packaging for cigarettes, because obviously it would affect the profits of Philip Morris. This one in Ecuador is quite juicy. In 2012, the government of Ecuador decided to terminate its contract with US oil company Occidental, after Occidental sold 40% of its production rights to another company without abiding by its legal obligation to obtain government approval. In response, Occidental turned to the investor state dispute settlement provisions in the US-Ecuador Bilateral Investment Treaty. And this allows companies to sue governments through international courts for policies that threaten their profits. As a result, Ecuador was forced to pay out $1.77 billion to Occidental, the highest compensation awarded to an investor through ISDS today. And this is despite the fact that it was Occidental that broke the law in the first place in Ecuador. And I'll give you two more examples, because there's quite a lot going around the world about this. In Slovakia, the government moved to restrict the powers of private insurance firms in the public health system. And a number of health insurance companies successfully sued the Slovak government for their loss of profits. The Dutch firm Achmea is now attempting to use the same powers to block the Slovak government from setting up a public insurance scheme that would provide health cover to all the country's citizens. And I think this is the biggest one. It's the Swedish company Vattenfall, who was suing the German government, because after Fukushima, the German government decided to abandon nuclear power, and therefore Vattenfall is suing the German government for 4.7 billion euros because of Germany phasing out nuclear power. I mean, they've already actually been successful in suing the German government over environmental regulations for the River Elbe, which Vattenfall argued made its proposed coal-fired power station there unviable. I mean, there's just a couple of instances of ISDS already being used. What TTIP will do is actually really bring it in a big way. I mean, one MEP described ISDS as a way of privatising justice to the detriment of our citizens. It puts companies above the law and justice system of the country in which they operate. And basically, transnational corporations can dictate the policies of democratically elected governments. I mean, Frances O'Grady, TUC General Sec, she was in Brussels a couple of days ago, and she's referring to TTIP as a zombie trade deal, and also ISDS as an undead presence. Because ISDS really is I think it's the cornerstone of TTIP. So it says really has nothing really to do with like increasing trade. I mean, all this regulatory cooperation, mutual recognition between US standards and EU standards. Now, as you would know, EU standards are far higher than US standards on countless things food standards and things like that. Let me talk about food standards first. Yeah, you use as strict a regulation on GM crops, pesticide use and food additives. So TTIP could open the EU market to cheaper products with poorer standards. So this harmonisation of standards, isn't the EU the US standards aren't going to go up to the high EU standards. The EU standards have come down here and meet. So we have a harmonisation on a lower scale than we have now. I mean, for example, Monsanto, I mean, TTIP would allow Monsanto to put independent farmers in many developing countries out of business, because they wouldn't be able to afford GM technology and would lose out to the bigger landowners. So this convergence, like I say, would be on the level of the US standards. I mean, currently, the EU bans 1,200 substances from use in cosmetics, and the US only bans 12, so that's the difference we're looking at. Also, in the EU, the EU operates by something called the precautionary principle, which means a business must prove to government that a product poses no threat to human health or the environment. But in the USA, a product is presumed safe, and for it to be banned, government must prove that there is a threat to human health or the environment, therefore the other way around. Excuse me a minute. So that's food standards. I will talk about the NHS shortly. Yes, and also I'll talk about this couple of other trade deals that I want to talk about. Maybe come out in the discussion. One's called CETA, and one's called TISA, and another one's called TPP. Sorry, I've lost track here. Yeah, the environment, again, I mean, if global temperature rises to be kept below 2 degrees and the more severe impacts of climate change are mitigated, around 80% of known fossil fuel reserves must be left in the ground. But the EU is actually pursuing a trade deal that would undoubtedly lead to even more money being poured into fossil fuel extraction. And the key aims of the TTIP negotiations is to push the USA to reduce or remove current restrictions on the export of crude oil and shale gas. And this would facilitate the export of tar sand oil mined in Canada and then refined and transported via the US to the EU. I mean, it cuts both ways, actually, because in banking regulation, regulations on the banks after the financial crisis are actually stricter in the USA than they are in Britain. So obviously the City of London is actually pushing Cameron. So obviously if we're going to have a convergence of standards on bank regulation, we won't want to have strict banking regulations like the USA. So we want the USA standards to come down to meet the British standards as well. So it's sort of cutting both ways, you know, EU going down to US standards and the other way around with the banking. Also with the NHS, let's talk about the NHS, it's been mentioned. TTIP would allow private firms running NHS services to actually sue the government if it chose to return the services to the public sector. I mean, under the deal, a US healthcare provider could secure a contract to run an NHS hospital however they want and irrespective of UK laws. And if the public objected and the government intervened, they could be sued for the company's losses of earnings. So running on a hospital on the cheap will make more profit but cost more lives. Under TTIP, it is profit, not safety, that matters. And the NHS is a public service. It's defined as a public service. Now, the 1993 GATS Treaty defines a public service as one supplied neither on a commercial basis nor in competition with one or more service suppliers. But what I've discovered on doing some research was, as a result of this recent Health and Social Care Act that the coalition government put into place, more and more health services in the UK are actually being put out to tender in a competitive market by clinical commissioning groups. So this commercial competitive element means that large parts of the NHS would not be protected by the treaty. Because at the moment, Cameron and a lot of other people are saying, oh, the NHS is going to be protected. Like I say, a lot of the NHS has already been farmed out to the private sector and will be subject to TTIP and ISDS litigation. I mean, there's things about anti-privacy as well, internet firms like spying on users as well, that could be actually be brought in by the back door via TTIP. It was actually rejected by the EU Parliament a couple of years ago. I mean, I won't talk into too much detail about that. As you can see, there's lots of different things, you know, pesticides. I won't go into any detail about them, but safe to say that standards in the EU are higher than in the US, and if we're talking about harmonisation, the standards in the EU are going to come down to the US level, because US firms are not going to want to improve standards because of the cost it would add on to production. I'll just quickly talk about jobs and workers' rights. I mean, the EU has admitted that TTIP will probably cause unemployment as jobs switch to the US, where labour standards and trade union rights are lower. It has even advised EU members to draw on European support funds to compensate for the expected unemployment. I mean, just look at the examples from bilateral trade agreements around the world in the last few decades. I mean, the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, between the US, Canada and Mexico, it caused the loss of 1 million jobs in the USA over a period of 12 years. And obviously, shrinking real-term wages for millions more workers. And in a briefing from last year, the European Parliament admitted that simulations find that TTIP would lead to net losses in terms of GDP, personal incomes and employment in the EU. Income decreased between the EU, approximately 600,000 job losses in the EU. That's according to this simulation. But I've also got some figures from the Centre for Economic Policy Research, which was a study commissioned by the European Commission in itself. And that said that TTIP could cost between 680,000 and 1.3 million job losses in Europe and between 325,000 and 715,000 jobs in the US. Also, the USA has not ratified a number of the most important International Labour Organization conventions, including the rights of freedom to association and collective bargaining. Recently, the US has also passed a right-to-work legislation in 24 states, most recently in the traditional union stronghold of Michigan, which clamped down on unions' capacity to bargain and organise. And so there's concern that European companies may take advantage of the ease of the market access created by TTIP to relocate to the USA and take advantage of the weak labour regulations. Similarly, there is also danger that American companies may be encouraged by TTIP to relocate to the EU states such as Bulgaria, Romania and Slovakia, where incomes are lower and trade unions are weaker than in other parts of the EU. So in closing, obviously there's a reduction in the sovereignty of national governments and their already weak power to resist the dictates of the world market. Various standards are going to be relaxed to weaker levels of consumer protection. I mean, as we've seen, what the transnational corporations call barriers to trade are things that restrict their profits. You know, labour rights, food safety rules, including restrictions on GMOs, regulations on the use of toxic chemicals, the minimum wage, health and safety laws, environmental regulations, digital privacy laws, and even new banking safeguards introduced in the US after the 2008 financial crisis. So the casualties of TTIP are going to be working people the world over. We'll end up with collateral damage. We'll become more powerless and more vulnerable than ever in the face of global capitalism. I mean, TTIP is another race to the bottom. It's the lowest common denominator that will further the interests of global capitalism at the expense of the world working class. Well, that's really about it. Well, really, what I want to talk about, well, what do socialists, where do we stand on TTIP? And I've got a few other things, and I'll talk about CETA and TISA in the discussion if you want afterwards. And also UKIP and Godfrey Bloom's views on TTIP are quite interesting. And people might want to know about where we are at the moment with negotiations on TTIP. So there you go. I hope that wasn't too dull. Right.
It all seems to be getting a bit frantic, doesn't it?
Mm. Yes, doesn't it? Yes. That's why I said it's yes. It's like a mad rush, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a mad rush to get hold of as much of it as they can.
Before like the world blows up or something, there's no world left.
Yeah. How does this
affect climate change? Because America's, they're all bilateral agreements and stuff. Because America, as far as I remember and know, did not sign up to treaty or whatever they call it.
Well, I did mention the climate. I'll mention it again.
No, it's a serious effect because America's standards are much lower, or Europe and America are just as low together.
Well, yeah, I wasn't really referring to the sort of the standards in relation to the climate. I think what TTIP will do, and also CETA, which is the EU-Canada treaty, which is also going through at the moment. Basically, the tar sand oils, which are extracted in Canada, they will remove the restrictions on that, transporting that and refining that in the USA, and we'll get that in the EU. That means now I can talk about the Canadian thing, CETA, I better mention it now, is the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, and it's a... an EU and Canadian trade deal, very similar to TTIP. Now, one of Canada's key negotiating aims was to promote the use of tar sands in Europe. Now, in 2012, tar sands oil. It's a new production technique. If you just do a search on the internet, Canada tar sands, and look at before and after photographs, the place looks very different.
Tar sand.
In 2012, the EU's Fuel Quality Directive proposed that tar sands should be given a 20% higher carbon value than conventional oil. This reflected the greater pollution caused by its production, and it was designed to steer companies away from using this particular form of fuel in the EU. However, a few weeks after CETA was concluded, the final version of this Fuel Quality Directive had been watered down and lacked the earlier requirement that companies needed to account for the higher emissions from tar sands, effectively neutering it exactly as Canada demanded. And like I say, as TTIP, what TTIP will do will also make sure then that tar sands oil can be exported from Canada via the USA into the EU, and it's got a higher climate carbon footprint. Does that answer your question, Jacqueline?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Kevin.
I'll show about the NHS. This idea, or this plan for American investment in the National Health Service, and the idea that if something frustrates their contract of an aspect of the NHS, that they can sue the government. Right?
Yeah.
Is this on the basis of expectations of profit or anything like that? Is there a concept there that they assume a certain amount of profit, and if it's frustrated, they can sue the government?
Well, probably. What was that phrase I used? A predictable regulatory environment. So if a company invests in a country or a service in a country and they've got a predictive regulatory environment, like certain restrictions on how to operate, and if they change, if a government decides to change, then a transnational corporation within the ISDS mechanism under TTIP, well, not even under TTIP, but even under the ISD mechanism now, could sue the government. Because if you raise a minimum wage, for example, or increase the taxation or something like that, that would not be something that was predicted beforehand and therefore would hinder their profits. But yeah, like I say, I mean, obviously companies will have a...
it's a kind of breach of contract, isn't
it? Yeah, that's what they're looking at, you know. And we're getting it enshrined in sort of like some international trade deal that nobody knows anything about. And
this is the deal we give, and this is the deal we want.
It sounds to me like we say breach of contract under any circumstances. So they're just in a win-win situation because,
yes,
first of all, with the oil, they can just change the law to suit them, basically take that out.
Yeah.
And secondly, with the with the bank and stuff, it's like, we're not going to take a dip in any profits under any circumstances. So if you do change the law, then we'll just sue you, and the state has to pay. So it's just been.
Yeah, it's like Danny said. There's just like this mad, frantic rush for profit, the dash for profit at any expense. Yeah.
But I
think
they might be terrified of the bubble going to burst soon.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, what interests me is anyone wants to correct me, please do. Is that I've always assumed that when a business went into producing anything is that the profit would be realised over the period of time they're working. And it wasn't necessarily predictable, but it would depend on the various things that are going on in that industry. But now, it seems to me, we've got a situation where some American firms are going to come into this and say, we have an expectation of profit. So whether they get it or not, there's an expectation. And if it goes against the way they plan it, then they can go, hang on a minute,
Yeah.
We want some compensation for this.
Well, I've got a good quote from Frances O'Grady when she was in Brussels the other day. She actually said, basically, unions reject the compensation culture that is building up in multinational companies, where suing democratically elected governments becomes more remunerative than actually providing a service. This is great.
So it literally is what you've just said.
Yeah.
It literally is.
Yeah.
We're going to get it one way or another. We're not ever, it's never going to be contemplated that we're going to have to take, a dip. We're going to get it one way or another. That's exactly it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is this not illegal?
It's illegal, that's the problem.
know, how can this be asked or allowed?
Well.
Well, Adam, yeah. I'll come back to you on that.
You've only talked about a mad rush, but this treaty might never get signed. It's just at a discussion stage at the moment. I read in the papers that the American Congress had rejected it or the principle because they were afraid the same thing would happen with this. Well, not particularly this one, but the one with the Pacific countries. Because it would lead to job losses like the North American
free trade.
And Obama had to get it through Congress on Republican votes because the Democrats were. I imagine there must be one of the European governments, some of them anyway, some left of centre governments left in Europe, will also be saying, we don't want this, so I mean, there's lots more negotiations to go. During the general election, we got bombarded, our candidates, from 38 degrees, and all this stuff, just stop TTIP, but I think we're a bit alarmist, but I mean, you're not there. It might
never
happen.
Well, 2 million, I think there's been a petition in Europe, you know, which including Britain, about 2 million people have signed a petition obviously opposing this TTIP, and it was before the EU Parliament, wasn't it, about 2 weeks ago, and it was then postponed. So they've gone away because obviously there's lots of difficulties, because obviously there's opposition building up towards it. But Congress, as you said to me earlier, Adam, has actually passed the authority then to, what is it? It gives the president power to negotiate on the behalf of Congress. So he's now passed that. So on the US side, he can negotiate TTIP. But on the EU side, no, it's not gone through. Somebody passed me something at work, actually, from a French internet magazine, that Austria are actually... they're actually talking about leaving the EU because of, amongst other things, TTIP. I don't know if it'll ever come to pass, but there's a certain growing resentment to TTIP. Then what will that bring to Austria? Because I don't think Austria, certain sectors of the in Austria, aren't happy with the EU. What was I going to say?
You're going to say something from Geoffrey Bloom?
Oh, Geoffrey Bloom.
Would that fit in there?
Yeah, what's it about? I want to just mention the TISA, Trading Services Agreement. This is another one that was only unveiled a couple of weeks ago. That was WikiLeaks actually released details of this. This is another trade deal between about 52 countries, including the EU, the USA, some South American countries, and Japan, Israel, and Australia, New Zealand, and Pakistan. And this will be further. Will include further deregulation and liberalisation of the public sector and transport industries, and it would include rules forcing countries to scrap foreign ownership ceilings in publicly provided telecoms, and it would basically favour privatisation and neoliberalism. But what I found quite bizarre was the removal of restriction on moving natural persons from one country to another, i.e. migrant workers. It's like the old days of the British Empire and transferring certain people in certain parts of the world, say from India to South Africa or from South Africa to the West Indies and everything. Because for some countries, their only comparative advantage, will be cheap labour. And this TISA agreement would entrench employers' ability to fight off any attempt to say if we had like a lot of cheap labour imported into this country, but they wouldn't be able to enforce British employment regulations. Not that, I mean, they're pretty good compared to some countries, so there'd be more exploitation of migrant workers with impunity, and governments would be powerless to do anything about it. I don't know if that was relevant to what anybody asked me, but I just thought that was quite interesting. Natural persons, movement of natural persons.
What's a natural person?
Well, exactly. What is a natural person? I mean, a human being, I suppose he means, doesn't it?
Does that mean they can't say that, can they?
No, I can't say human being, because it doesn't sound right.
What does that actually boil down to? Is it that they could work in this, whichever country, under a certain, like a different contract, like
yes,
the
yes.
minimum wage in their country, and then get back here instead of the minimum wage in this country.
Yes, I think it would boil down to something like that, couldn't it? Yeah.
They've got a nerve, I have to say.
I'm relieved to hear it hasn't been signed yet. Yeah. But even the fact that it's on the table.
And that's been for a couple of years. Yeah.
It's on the table.
Yeah.
It gives you an insight, you know, into the motives and the drives in capitalism.
Indeed, yeah.
The reasons for doing and what's happening, you know, where the power really lies. Mm.
Yes.
You know, and politicians are just increasingly telling, having to do the whim of the corporation.
Yes, it's increasing all the time, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to make a cultural reference, which might convince a comment from you.
Go on.
Anyone who's as old as me may remember the film It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World.
Yes.
Spencer Tracy.
I do, yeah.
And I was just wondering, you know, if that film could be used to express what's going on at the moment. Because in that situation, you know, where there was some money to be found, certain people gravitate towards the scene, all trying to outdo each other, all trying to get the best share, right? Which is indicative of capitalism.
Yeah, it's almost a satire.
In many ways.
Yeah, yeah.
It just shows up as a parody of capitalism.
Yeah. Yes, I know. Spencer Trace is the police chief in the town where the money's hidden, isn't it?
Weren't big enough for him.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's right. It's interesting, though. An ex-comrade of the party actually said to me, "Oh, UKIP oppose TTIP," and I just thought, "Do they?" Okay, so I thought I'd look into it, you know, because I thought, "Hang on a minute, UKIP are proposing TTIP, right?" Yeah. Well, actually, well, as we know, the UKIP actually believe we should leave the EU and basically negotiate our own free trade agreements. I mean, they're in favour of many things that TTIP actually stands for, but they just don't like it being negotiated by the EU. I mean, Nigel Farage said, UKIP is in favour of free trade, but we are opposed to the undemocratic commission negotiating on our behalf. And this is what Roger Helmer, who's a UKIP MEP, said, which I think says it all. "If we'd been a free and independent country, I rather suspect we'd have had such a deal with the US 10 years ago, if not 20. I think we have no alternative to support the deal, even if we'd rather have done it ourselves. And of course, in principle, free trade is an excellent thing, a consummation devoutly to be wished for." Also, as we know, UKIP welcome relaxation of environmental restrictions forced on the UK by the EU. They favour reduced rights for workers. They want to scrap race discrimination laws. Maternity pay, they call lunacy. And they want to reduce holiday and sick pay. And what do they say? Some EU directives, such as the Working Time Directive, need amending because they restrict the British work ethos and therefore our economy. I mean, that's class. That's UKIP. Now, Godfrey Bloom was a member of UKIP, you know, I've got something from him, but he said, actually, he only said it 2 weeks ago. And he obviously, he's not like the UKIP anymore. Well, I mean, obviously, he's still UKIP, but he's not a member. But he said on TTIP, "For the conviction free trader, the international classical liberal TTIP is a very natural progression in a global society, especially between true great trading blocs, the USA and the EU. It begs the expectation of such supporters of 19th century advocates such as Frederick Bastiat that when trade crosses borders, armies do not. A qualified welcome, therefore, from such idealists was fairly immediate, rightly so. Thinking ahead," Godfrey continues, "why not BRICS members, African Union, Far East trade associations? One might carry Bastiat's theory to fit with more pressing international concerns, such as migratory refugees. Quote, when trade crosses borders, migrants don't. Liberal societies with free trade agreements prosper. It is for prosperity that migrants are prepared to risk their lives and that of their families. So what's not to like?" So he concludes, so the theory of TTIP is noble and worthwhile, but he says it's doomed to failure. Because he imagines that he doesn't imagine for a moment that the regulators, both sides of the Atlantic, will not protect their turf, and that they will voluntarily give ground, and also that big business in the world of crony capitalism, and these are his words, really want to see increased competition from small and medium-sized businesses. I think that's quite a good sort of analysis of it, really. And you know, again, coming, I mean, we wanted actually Godfrey Bloom to come here because I think it would be great to discuss capitalism and socialism, because he's classic Ricardo Adam Smith like free trade liberal, and we want him. We have got in touch with him, but he never got back to us. Because when we got Elizabeth Jones to come here, we wanted her to sort of like do the capitalism bit, but she didn't, did she? She just attacked the EU all the way through and all the European nations. But yeah, he's got it. He's more spot on than most people, really. But what about socialists and TTIP? You know, I've got a couple of quotes from Marx on free trade. But, I mean, where do we stand on TTIP? I know we've written about it in the Social Standard, I think, in Cooking the Books, didn't we, a few months ago? I mean, as a socialist, I oppose it.
Reformist.
A reformist, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't like the idea of it.
No, we're reformist.
Yeah, but I don't like the idea of it because, like I said, we're working people, they're going to be the casualties.
Not if you're everywhere. A consumer. That's all I heard coming from that.
Yeah, well, that was at the beginning of the talk, I spoke about Cameron and Cridland and Juncker talking about it, and they obviously refer to people as consumers, yeah. You know, rather than. Or I refer to people as working people or workers.
Yeah. What does Marx say?
Well, I always go back to this. It's only a short piece. It's actually in it's in the back of The Poverty of Philosophy, which is about Proudhon. But there's a speech. Marx made a speech on the question of free trade in Brussels in 1848, and he said, "What is free trade under the present conditions of society? It's freedom of capital." So when you've torn down the few national barriers which still restrict the free development of capital, you will merely have given it complete freedom of action. So long as you let the relation of wages, labour to capital exist, no matter how favourable the conditions under which you accomplish the exchange of commodities, there will always be a class which exploits and a class which is exploited. It is really difficult to understand the presumption of the free traders who imagine that the more advantageous application of capital will abolish the antagonism between industrial capitalists and wage workers. On the contrary, the only result will be that the antagonism of these classes, two classes, will stand out more clearly. Now, Marx goes on later to say, "Do not be deluded by the abstract word freedom. Whose freedom? Not the freedom of one individual in relation to another, but freedom of capital to crush the worker." And he also says, "Every one of the destructive phenomena to which unlimited competition gives rise within any one nation is reproduced in more gigantic proportions in the market of the world." Now, he concludes his speech in Brussels this is just before the revolutions of 1848, and he concludes it with a really interesting paragraph, and I want to see what comments come from the discussion about that. He says, "The free trade system works destructively. It breaks up old nationalities and carries antagonism of proletariat and bourgeoisie to the uttermost point. In a word, the free trade system hastens the social revolution. In this revolutionary sense alone, gentlemen, I am in favour of free trade." There's Marx. Now, I know what he means. I mean, you know, I know in 1848 he probably thought, yeah, for unlimited free trade will create the social revolution. We haven't actually had the social revolution. Will TTIP caused the social revolution? I don't know. Anyway, I don't know what people's comments are about that, but...
Absolutely. Just like the common market, this TTIP thing, this capitalism becoming more and more worldwide.
Yes, exactly. As Marx predicted. Yeah.
Marx's view, that's a good thing. It
paves
the way
for... Lifting people out of poverty.
It creates a social antagonism, yeah. Makes them more starker. Yeah. But in the meantime, you know.
And brings the workers of the world face to face.
Yes, yeah. Well, supposedly that's what he's saying in 1848, and like I say, you know.
Because in that meeting, there'll be an introduction to civil rights, won't there?
Sorry?
In that meeting,
yeah.
There'll be an introduction. Yeah. They'll start working out, and, you know, we want another rah.
Yeah.
And so we'll be with us at last, and we'll realise we'll have that common interest.
Yeah.
But it is getting more blatant, isn't it? I mean, the contradictions have really started to, you know, get heavy. It's definitely becoming that us and them. I mean,
yes, yeah, people talk about it all the time, don't they? They talk about us and them and inequality all the time. Even in the 80s and into the 90s, when we'd had, like, Thatcher and Major, and obviously inequality had increased, but no one really talked about it because it wasn't a start, was it? Yeah. But
perhaps the division in identity is going to become sharper.
Can't ignore it. No. Anyway, I mean, I thought I'd talk about TTIP because it's current actually, but it's in the news. And like I say, I'll talk about trade unions next month because again, further restrictions on the right to collective organisation and bargaining. You know, it's going to restrict workers' rights even further. But I've noticed recent ballots though for trade union action has actually been really high turnout. Yeah. So that, have you heard that? Yeah, that 80% and things like 90%. You know, people are turning out to vote, even if they're going to vote against it. They're actually turning out to vote on strike action. So this government threshold of 40 or 50% is going to be blown sky high, even if they do bring it in.
About time, because I mean, well, I've always been a union member in public service. A lot of people were members, but really took no interest. Which is why you get such a low voting turnout when there's a strike call.
Yes. I mean, back in 2009, my trade union, we went on strike action in Finland. I mean, I had colleagues who just didn't vote. You know, so probably the turnout back in 2009 was like really low, like under 40%. And it was a vote for strike action. And I said to this guy at work, why didn't you vote? And he said, like, I just go along with what the majority decided. Oh, yeah, I know, it didn't make sense.
As being legitimised by having the
turnout. Yeah, exactly.
He didn't want any trouble.
No, exactly. Anyway, we digressed, actually, to trade unions, but that's next month.
Actually, he didn't care the trade.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't want to make trouble for himself, wanted to take the trade down.
I don't know if people know, but... In more recent years, the last 10 years, even for a one-day strike, if you go out on a one-day strike, in national, you know, banner waving and procession and what have you, for the latest problem, you then get a letter from the, which you never used to do, from people that do your pay slip, saying, we noticed, you know, you have not turned up for work for one day, you know, this will cost you X amount of your ultimate pension.
It's quite intimate.
On one hand, it's
funny.
Yeah. But to some people,
you know, that's
quite nasty.
Yeah. Well, that was one day strike, they did that and said, yeah, I was on strike, take me off my pay.
Yes.
Yeah.
There'll be
a little. Yeah, but other people thought, oh, well, I'm going
to
have the courage of conviction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Expect
anyway, that's trade unions, but...
Come back to TTIP.
Yeah.
The opposition to it tends to be nationalist. I mean, it's like the opposition to the common market. Denmark's an anti-common market party, but they want to restore tariffs and restore... Stop the free movement of capital and stop the free movement of workers. But then they can't. It's just... I think
the opposition, though. I mean, it's the harmonisation standards, you know, which I spoke about, you know, and that's that. What's that got to do with like free trade? You mean we're going to have like chlorine washed beef, you know, on our dinner tables, and chicken carcasses washed in bleach, hormone stuffed beef, and things like that. Well, I've got a really good quote here, and this is a bit hyperbole. Take some hormone-fed beef rinsed in acid, rub in a dash of genetically modified oil from pesticide-soaked crops, and if you like your steak extra luxurious, a dab of butter laced with antibiotics. I mean, that... I know it sounds a bit extreme, but that could be the result. When we lower the standards to meet US standards and all this stuff is let into the EU, and we'll end up in the UK as well. So, TTIP is not... It's not about free trade. It's about increasing profits... And also this compensation culture for the transnational corporations. So as soon as like anything like hinders them making profit, they'll just like sue the government and like get billions of dollars that way. That's how I see it, anyway.
The French government never
allowed that. Well, the French government have safeguarded the film industry, which they already do anyway. There's the restrictions on English language films coming in, but they've even restricted it further from TTIP negotiations. Safeguarded it. Like I say, Cameron keeps standing up and saying the NHS is safe in our hands, it's safe from TTIP. But as I pointed out, There's already privatisation taking place in the NHS under the Health and Social Care Act of 2013. That these parts of the NHS wouldn't be subject to that safeguarding and would be subject to ISDS mechanisms and things.
Don't let the Labour government off the hook. They started this.
Oh yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Labour isn't opposed to TTIP. You know, many people seem to be opposed to it. Like the Green Party and probably the SNP to a certain extent. And yes, I have noticed recently reading the Morning Star, the Communist Party are coming really big now on anti-EU. They're probably going to try and get as many of Labour and the trade union movement to vote against staying in the EU. So it's like we'll have a UKIP, but allied with the Communist Party, the Morning Star, and half the trade union movement will vote against being in the EU.
I can remember the last referendum.
Yeah.
In 1975, the same thing happened. The National Front and the Communist Party spent the same.
Yeah, platform. Enoch Powell and Tony Benn were on the same platform. Yeah. Yeah.
From one extreme to another.
Oh, I see. Hello.
Hello there.
Oh, you just missed it.
Yeah. Oh, come here.
Good to see you.
Yeah, this is all stuff I've picked up over the last year. This is when I first heard about it, July last year. And then there's a few other things came out with all these anti-austerity demos recently, and obviously TTIP was a focus of a few people at the anti-austerity demo on Saturday.
Why should members of the working class be interested in TTIP? As socialists, we've got a fair enough idea, we look at everything. But why should members of the working class be interested in this?
Well,
it sounds so boring.
Losing your job? Losing your job isn't boring, is it? You're working as a porter in like a privatised section of the NHS, and you're owned by some transnational corporation, and you're being paid the minimum wage, and if they say a government is elected that seeks to impose a minimum wage on that sector, say the NHS, you wouldn't be able to get it. I mean, this further erodes workers' rights and labour rights if it goes ahead. And this ISDS basically undermines their democracy, you know, capitalist democracy. It's actually undermining liberal democracy, you know, in countries. I mean, yeah, people are interested because it is a bit...
Dry.
It is a bit dry, of course it is, but I mean, I like speaking personally about the Paris Commune. I've spoken about it three times, but I love the Paris Commune, you know, I'll talk about that any day, but I think we're going to talk about these sort of things, and, you know, current issues. So I'm going to talk about trade unions, say, next month, because it's in the news. They're going to be further rights are going to be eroded, and that's why I think it is important, and... But it's all been kept secret, and the only people who like go on there.
I've never heard of it until I saw your email. I was all in the pot.
Same here. To the elections.
Yes. Well, I did. Yeah, it was last year, and it's been developed.
It's been in the news
for quite a few years. Yeah, as Adam says, you know, all these sort of things started under New Labour and things like that. But yeah, that's why it's important.
Not protectionism. What they're doing now.
No, they're abolishing.
No, they're abolishing protectionism. This is free trade. Unlimited freedom of movement of...
Yeah, but it's not. No, it's when they say free trade, it's protection.
Yeah.
It's revenge.
Yeah, protection.
Restrictions.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's like Marx said.
Yeah, they are. That's what Marx says about free trade. You know, that's what I read out earlier. That sums it up, really. And that TTIP is just another example of, like, globalisation, isn't it, really? Which began in the 16th century, didn't it? I mean, global capitalism has been developing for decades, centuries, hasn't it?
Right, fair enough.
Yeah. I don't know, I think we exhausted that.
I'm just thinking about these guys. It's like it's kind of evolved into the big game, the main game in the casino. And what's happening is that all the gamblers are demanding to play with the same chips.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's easy. You know, they're going to, you know, they can see what's happening, they can predict the future.
Yeah.
And secure their profits.
Indeed. Yeah.
It's the way the game's evolved.
Yeah.
And it's become. I mean, I thought. The way you explained it to me was very simply put. There was a lot of information. There was a lot in there. Well, you make people understand. And if I know, I can understand that there were miscarriages and the importance of it.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, we should talk about it.
Yeah, I tried not to read too much from here, actually. Because I've been reading it and reading it for weeks and weeks and weeks, I actually was putting it all in my own words and everything, and obviously it was coming out quite simple.
Exactly. It was easy to understand.
Yeah.
If they attended the talk, fair enough. But most do not. And when you see it in the papers and the journals, it is so dry, they do it on purpose like that.
Yeah.
So you don't see what's being said.
But yeah, I mean, when you're at home, they'll go onto the internet and just put in TTIP, put in TISA as well, TISA is another one, and CETA and TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership. The TISA one is the one about natural persons, you know, that's what got me, removal of restriction on moving natural persons. It's this sort of jargon that really gets me, you know.
Is that for the slave trade? Well, they get paid a bit. The Americans and the Europeans. What else?
Well, the slave trade is what we're in early capitalism, isn't it? And the slave trade had to be abolished in favour of wage slavery.
Yeah. But it is going to be a bit like that, I think.
Wage slavery will become more blatant. Is it more difficult to explain away?
I think Kevin might be talking about Qatar now. I feel like he might mention.
Have I missed the Socialist Standard article on CTIP, or is it coming? Is it about to come?
It's been.
There was a bit in Cooking the Books, wasn't there?
Yeah.
You cooking the books?
Alan Johnson,
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we should back off from this as a part. I think we should stop TTIPing around and we should get to
it. Just go down and say. That's a
lot of fun.
Well, thanks for that.
That's good, yeah. It's it's a big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal.
It's on the table, means it's a big deal.
Yeah. But I mean, I think, just going back to ISDS, and I just want to repeat myself again, you know, I mean, the fact that a Swedish energy company is suing the German government because the German government decides to abandon nuclear power after Fukushima. I mean, that's a democratically elected government. I mean, it's Angela Merkel, but they're a democratically elected government saying, like, well, we're not going to use nuclear power. Well, I mean, a transnational corporation based in Sweden says, like, I'm not having that. Our profits are going to go down the pan.
You don't fuck with our hustle.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. Oh, yeah. I think that's about it, really. I think I've covered everything there.
Oh, what a good idea.
Members and visitors, I'm afraid you'll have to go up to the kitchen. I've just realised I forgot about tea.
That's all right.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.